Hello?
Hello?
This is it. This is the last portion of this session on growth that we're going through. This aspect of discipleship. The passage that we've been going through is from 2 Peter chapter 1, more specifically verses 5 through 7, where he outlines the steps of growth from a foundation of faith all the way up to love. And we started off by saying, giving all diligence, add to your
faith,
right? The foundation was faith. We're all at the same place when we come to faith. Everybody has the same resources that God gives. Everybody gives us a chance to succeed, gives us all the equipment, everything that we need, and we're all on a level playing field, even though we all have different roles. He says, add to your faith
virtue.
And virtue is just what?
Doing.
Yeah, doing what's good and avoiding what's wrong. So that it's very simple, cut and dry, regardless of how you feel, what you think. You believe that this is the truth. You believe that what God is saying is the best thing. Virtue is simply doing it. And he says, add to your virtue
knowledge.
Right? And it's not just any kind of knowledge. It's knowing God. It's not just a set of facts. It's not just information. It's precepts. Right? It's words to live by. It's words of action, rules of action. That's the knowledge that we want, the knowledge of God, the knowledge that comes directly from His Word. Because other kinds of knowledge that's just informational, that just puffs us up. There's no need for that in the Christian walk. Any knowledge that we seek from God is knowledge that's a precept. It's knowledge to live by, and it's to be used practically to affect the change in our lives. Add to your knowledge,
self-control.
Self-control is mastery of the self, bringing in every dimension of ourselves subject to our own soul while that is subject to God. It's the same symbol of a sword being tempered in a blacksmith shop. That's why the word is sometimes translated temperance, where there's hammering, there's chiseling, there's melting, there's a lot of stuff that God is doing to form us and to shape us into tools that can be used for Him. And then he says, add to your self-control perseverance. And perseverance is maintaining that shape that he's formed us in, maintaining the sharpness and getting even sharper as we're being used. As we go through time, as we go through trials, as we go through circumstances, being able to maintain that self-control and everything else, being able to maintain the shape and the path that God has for us is perseverance. And then he says, add to your perseverance
godliness.
And godliness is revering God, acknowledging Him in everything that we do and everything that happens, so that I don't get puffed up. I don't think I've done something. Instead, I realize, God, You are doing amazing things. You are amazing. You've equipped me to do this. You've placed this situation in my life. You've done this and You've done that. And that way, I can come before Him humbly and say, God, You are amazing. I acknowledge You in my life, and I revere You, and I respect You, and it affects every aspect of our lives. Then he says, add to your godliness
brotherly
kindness. This was last week. Brotherly kindness, Philadelphia, it refers to love within a family. It refers to love among believers. From the New Testament on, it's love within a church family or just the body of Christ in general. The Christian family. Love among believers. Brotherly kindness, where we... And it entails a lot of things. We show kindness to each other, yes, but we also rejoice when our brother rejoices, even if they're elevated above us. We are happy for them. And it also entails not just giving kindness, but also receiving kindness. Right? We want to be able to do both. We need to keep the cycle moving, the cycle flowing. So brotherly kindness works both ways. It works throughout the church. And it's not just me and my brother who's lifted up, but every time that brotherly kindness is shown, the entire body is edified. The entire body is encouraged. And God is glorified through that. And so today, the very last part of that section says, add to your brotherly kindness
love.
Now, I had some trouble with this because I was looking through the Bible trying to find places where does it talk about love. No, I'm kidding. That was not the issue. Love is found throughout the Bible, right? All over the place. There's no way that any one sermon could completely cover everything the Bible has to say about love. But I'm going to do my best just to share what God has shown me in this process, and more specifically how love relates to this entire process of growth and each of these steps that we've looked through. Now, last week we actually did talk about love, but that love was Philadelphia. That was the brotherly kindness. This love is agape. This is the essence of the divine nature that we want to partake of. Do you remember the start of that chapter in 2 Peter 1, where he says that you may be partakers of the divine nature? Remember that? That was the goal. And so if it ends with love, then that is the divine nature. Right? What does 1 John 4:8 say? God is love. So if God is love, then love is the divine nature. So if we are adding to our brotherly kindness love, then that's what we're striving for, that part of divine nature. It's a sacrificial love that's given by choice. And there's no concept of reciprocation in this kind of love. There's no idea of a back and forth here. Love, this agape love, is simply a sacrificial love. It's one way. As far as I'm concerned, it's one way. There's no concept of I'm expecting something back. Now, ideally, it should go two ways, right? It should go every which way. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as God is concerned, the agape love that he has, that he calls us to have, should only be one way, as far as I'm concerned. Meaning I should not be expecting something back. Although when it comes back, it's great, because again, the whole body is edified. The whole body is lifted up from it. That's why Jesus died for everybody, even the ones who won't reciprocate that love. Even the ones who choose not to accept it, he still died for them. He still wants them. And so it's that kind of love. It's the culmination and the perfection of every step that we've gone through so far. It's perfect faith, perfect virtue, perfect knowledge, perfect self-control, perfect perseverance, perfect godliness, perfect brotherly kindness. It's all of those things taken to perfection and meshed together. What does he say to add to love? Anything? No, he stops right there. He doesn't say add to your love something. Why is that? You can't say add to your love, because God is love. So if there's something to add to love, that means God's incomplete, right? Is God incomplete? No. So there is nothing to add to love. He's saying this is the culmination. This is the perfection. This is the final step that we're striving for. So from that point, there's nothing left to add. Now, I've come across a few passages that deal with these things, how love relates to each of these steps. So I want to start this section by just going through a couple of those. When it comes to faith, Hebrews 11:6 says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." Without faith, it's impossible to please him. If you want to love God, you got to believe in him, right? You got to believe what he says. You have to. There's no love if there's no trust, right? There's no love if there's no mutual faith. And you must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. There's that diligence again. Remember that? The passage starts with giving all diligence, and we covered that in the first week. Giving all diligence. Believing that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Meaning, I don't just believe that God is great and God is worthy to be praised, even though that's enough. I also believe that all of this stuff that I'm doing, all this diligence I'm putting in, it's for my benefit. It's the best thing for me as well. Not only is God glorified, but God has designed the world in such a way that we are benefited the most when we seek him, when we believe him, and when we trust in him and act in that belief. Now, virtue was pretty simple. John 14:15. If you love me, keep my commandments. Very simple. Right? You love me, do what I said to do. If I'm not doing what he said to do, how can I say that I love you? How can I say that I love him? Right? I can't say I love God if when he tells me what to do, and I believe it's the best thing for me, but I choose not to do it. So he says, if you love me, keep my commandments. So again, love is it's the culmination of virtue as well. Knowledge. I actually found a couple of verses for this that I liked. I couldn't pick one, so I've got three of them for you. He says in Philippians 1:9, Paul is speaking, and he says, "And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment." Like, what? How does love abound in knowledge? Well, Paul says it. I want your love to abound in knowledge and all discernment. You see, there is a connection, right? As we grow in knowledge of God, as we grow in love for God, we want to know Him more, right? What kind of a loving relationship would it be if the two people don't know each other, right? Or don't know anything about each other? Right? You need both to sustain a relationship. It wouldn't be healthy if I say I love someone, but I made no effort to get to know them or to get to know about them, either one. And so he says, I want your love to abound still more and more in knowledge and in all discernment. So if you want to grow in love, one of the things you have to do is get to know God and get to know what He says, what He wants from us. So that's why it's one of the steps on the ladder. Psalm 91:14, because He has set His love upon me, therefore I will deliver Him. I will set Him on high because He has known my name. Puts them together again, right? He has set His love upon me. He has known my name. Puts them together. They are related. Love is the culmination of knowledge as well, that kind of knowledge. And same verse as before, 1 John 4:8, right? It doesn't just say God is love. There's actually more to the verse. It says, He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. And the verse before says, He who loves knows God, right? So he almost equates them here. He puts them together and says, if you love, you have to know. If you're not making an effort to know, then how can you say you love? Love is the perfection and culmination of knowledge as well. What about self-control? Leviticus 19:18, he says, "You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." Love your neighbor as yourself. How does that sound like self-control? Well, it says love your neighbor as yourself. That basically means I do need to love myself, right? Love your neighbor. We're talking about a sacrificial kind of love, right? If I'm willing to make sacrifices for my neighbor's benefit, but there are things in my life that I need to sacrifice for my own benefit that I'm not willing to do, is that a perfect love? Am I complete in that? Am I able to make all those sacrifices I need for other people if I can't even do it for my own benefit? No. What about forgiveness? That's part of love, right? If I'm able to forgive others, but I never forgive myself, am I complete in that? No. If I don't have mastery of these things within myself, it's a lot harder to extend it to other people. It needs to be, some of these things need to be mastered within myself first, so that they're subordinated in me and not just suppressed. So that way, when I do it for somebody else, it's natural. It flows naturally. I'm able to do it because that's how I treat myself. That's how I recognize that God views me, and I'm able to pour it out to my neighbor because of that. What about perseverance? 2 Timothy 3:10 and 11. Paul is speaking again. He says, "But you, Timothy, you have carefully followed my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, love, perseverance, persecutions, afflictions, which happened to me at Antioch, at Iconium, at Lystra, what persecutions I endured, and out of them all, the Lord delivered me." Did you hear that? What was sandwiched between long-suffering and perseverance and persecution? What was that word? In between all those things, he said, love. You've seen my perseverance, you've seen the persecutions, you've seen the long-suffering, you've seen the love. He puts them all together. Why? Because his love was manifest through those things. When he was willing to endure all these hardships for the churches that he was planting and for the disciples that he was reaching out to, his love was manifest through that. And so again, love is the culmination of perseverance as well. All of these things, you see how they're leading one after the other through love, and love is present in every single one of these steps. Godliness. Deuteronomy 6:5. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. The Lord your God. So it's not just your neighbor as yourself, but it says love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. That means everything you think about, everything you do, everything you feel, love God with it. Acknowledge Him in everything. As you go about your day with all your strength, love God. That means what? It means acknowledge Him and revere Him and know that He is there. Right? That's just some of the things. Right? With all your soul, with all your heart. Recognize Him in your soul. Commune with Him. Godliness. If I don't acknowledge Him, if there's a couple that's married and neither one acknowledges that the other exists for most of the day, what kind of marriage is that? Or when they're among people, those people don't recognize that this person is married, right? What kind of, that's unhealthy, isn't it? If there was a married couple and one of them was here and I knew them for a while and I never knew they were married, there'd be something wrong with that. And so here, he's saying godliness leads to love, and love is the culmination of godliness as well. Because it needs to be there. There needs to be that acknowledgement. People need to know that I recognize God's hand in everything. I don't claim the credit for myself. I don't blame the universe. I don't put things on people. I say, God, you are in control. And I love you with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my strength. Brotherly kindness. Jeremiah 2:2. He says, go and cry in the hearing of Jerusalem, saying, thus says the Lord, I remember you, the kindness of your youth, the love of your betrothal, when you went after me in the wilderness, in a land not sown. The kindness of your youth, the love of your betrothal. He's saying, I remember a time when you used to come after me, and your love was manifest through kindness. In this place, in the wilderness, in the land where there was nothing, you showed kindness. You brought a stamp there, and I could see the love in it. I could see love flowing through, and everything that was there could see the love coming through. And he's speaking in the hearing of Jerusalem. He's saying, go talk to my people and tell them, I remember a time when you were kind and love was manifest through you. You were kind to each other. And so he's linking those together as well. Love is, again, the culmination of brotherly kindness as well. So every single one of these steps is connected to love. They're all necessary. They're all required. Just because they're lower on the ladder doesn't mean any one of them is less important. Every one of them needs to be added on top of the other in order for love to exist, in order for love to be manifest and to be complete. So who knows what chapter is considered the chapter on love? First Corinthians. Okay, we got two people who answered it in pieces, but we got the right answer. 1 Corinthians 13. That's the one. What I want to do, well, let me read it for you real quick. We're just going to read verses 4 through 7, just the part that says specifically love is this, love is that. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7. He says, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. What I want us to do is take a quick break from teaching from up here. I want all of us to split up into groups, take those four verses, and take each element and see if you can identify it as belonging to one of the categories we've been talking about. One of those steps. Faith, virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness. See if you can break them down into those parts. Or if something doesn't belong to any of them, identify that as well. So discuss it with your friends and we'll all come together and talk about our findings. So we can see, is it true? Is love really just the culmination of all these things? All right. Are you ready?
Yes, we are.
Right. Let's do it. Okay, let's go through it. We got love suffers long. You want to do the first one? Go for it.
Love is kind.
No, that's second.
Where's 4 to 7?
Love suffers, or love is patient sometimes.
Love is patient, and then add to temperance, patience.
Patience, right? So perseverance, that step. There you go. Right? This is easy, right? No problem. and is kind. What about that? Is kind.
You got brotherly kindness.
Brotherly kindness. Everyone else get that?
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Like I said, it's easy, right? We got the same aspects that are in both. Love does not envy. What do we have for that?
Is there only one right answer?
No, of course not.
Can we think like artists?
Yeah, go for it. What do you think love does not envy?
I think that it's virtue.
Okay.
Because if you're going to just do something with high morals, you're going to just not be jealous of someone.
Okay.
And that's dual high morals, and that's doing.
That's true. Anybody get something else?
We had self-control.
Self-control. Why not virtue? Why self-control?
It's hard to just not be jealous of something. It's just something that naturally happens. When you're not building yourself up with all the good steps first.
Yeah.
Self-control kind of comes after that.
Yeah. What would it, if it were virtue, what might it have said? Like, what might it be added here if it meant virtue? Instead of love does not envy, it might say what? Love does not act on envy?
Yeah.
Maybe? Right? Because virtue doesn't involve what's inside. But here, love does not envy, meaning the feeling of envy doesn't even well up inside. Remember when we talked about self-control? We said it's a transition from suppression to subordination. Meaning I don't just feel envy and then have to suppress it and push it down so I don't act on it. Self-control is when I don't even feel envy. It doesn't even come up. It's subject to me. So, exactly. It's naturally doesn't appear. So that's what I think. For does not envy. I think self-control. Love does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. What do you get for that? Yeah. New King James. But it should be the same concept through it all. Love does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. What does that mean in layman's terms? Yeah, love doesn't boast. Love is... Huh? Yeah, it's not proud. Where does humility come from?
From godliness.
Godliness. Why do you say that? Why do you say humility comes from godliness?
Because that is being like Christ. His humility is he humbled himself to the point of death, right?
What is godliness? What is godliness?
Godliness is
It's what is godliness?
It's maintaining your strength.
That's perseverance. Godliness is when I acknowledge God in everything, right? When I revere God and I respect God. If I do something great, but I acknowledge God's hand through it all, instead of being puffed up and saying, I did something great, I'm going to humble myself before God and say, thank you for everything that you're doing, right? Humility comes from godliness. Because I might actually be better than somebody at something. Right? I might actually have a skill that helps me to get something done. And so if it weren't for godliness, I could be proud of that. Right? I could boast about that. But because I recognize that it comes from God, because I recognize God as sovereign, as the greatest of all, then I can't boast about something in myself and say, look how great I am. All I can do is humble myself and submit to God. And say, praise God, He's the one who enables me. He's the one who's working. So I believe that this humility that it talks about does not parade itself, is not puffed up. I believe that comes from godliness.
That's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. does not behave rudely. What do we got for that one?
That's kindness.
Get virtue and kindness coming over here. what do you think it is? What do you think it is? You can all answer. It doesn't have to go in order. Go ahead. Okay. It does not behave rudely. Anybody get something else or? Okay. No. Is anybody like which category did you put that in? Anybody get something besides virtue or kindness? We got some self-control over here. Okay. Okay. Brotherly kindness. So, does not.
No, I mean for future ones we have answers.
So we've got virtue, we've got self-control, we've got brotherly kindness. Let me ask you this. Which one is the of those three, which is the most directly linked to your behavior?
Virtue.
Virtue. Why do you say virtue is most directly linked to your behavior?
Not behave rudely. Uh-huh. Behavior is just something you can do. Something that's an action. I don't have to behave rudely. I might think rude thoughts. I might be like, oh, I really don't like this guy right now. But I don't act on it. That's just virtue.
Yeah. Is it possible?
Temperament. You can choose to be temperate and calm.
Uh-huh.
Behavior.
Yeah. Is it possible to not behave rudely without having full self-control? Is it possible to not behave rudely without having self-control? Yeah, it's possible. I might still be feeling all these things inside, but I don't let it show. That's why it comes up so low, right? Because it says behave, because it specifically mentions action does not behave rudely, I feel that it's most closely tied to virtue. But obviously you need self-control if you want to do it consistently, right? If you want it to be authentic, if you want it to be real, then you'll need self-control for that. But in my view, just the fact that it says, because it mentions behavior, I think it's most closely linked to virtue. But they're all good answers. Yeah.
So we said virtue is just doing it, just not acting rudely.
Yeah.
And not feeling the self-control gets to the point where I'm not even thinking that I want to act rudely.
I'm yeah.
Not thinking like this is, that's self-control.
Self-control is basically does not behave rudely naturally.
Okay.
All right, where it's not even a struggle. That's how I view it. Does not seek its own. Is this connected to any of them? Huh? Well, they all are, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything less? Anything? No, you can't. That's the point. Well, we'll just answer all of them. It specifically says love does these things. Does not seek its own. Where does that fall? Brotherly kindness. Why do you say that? Or does not seek its own? Yeah, I'm seeking someone else's instead. I'm willing to elevate them even if it's above me. I want the whole body to be lifted, not just my own position, or not just any particular individual's position. I don't want to favor one over the other. I want to seek the benefit of the entire body. Does not seek its own brotherly kindness. Yeah? That's good. Is not provoked. Self-control. Self-control. We all got self-control? Why do we get self-control? Anybody, go for it.
Because if you're not provoked, you have to have self-control to not be provoked. Someone can provoke you, and then to not be provoked, you have to control yourself.
That's true. Yeah. Again, it's not does not act on provocation. It simply is not provoked. I'm not holding myself back even though I'm really angry. I'm not even angry. I'm not provoked. I recognize that whatever you're trying to do to make me mad, God is greater than all of that. And it's not worth my anger, this thing that you're doing. It's not worth it. So is not provoked. Again, because I see that it's not just an action, it's more internal, then I see that as self-control. Thinks no evil. Or keeps no account of evil, things like that. That's what some of them say. What do we got? I heard self-control. Okay. Anything else? Anybody get anything else?
Self-control and godliness.
Self-control and godliness. Okay. Anybody get anything else? Okay. Why self-control? So you see it as seeing the good in people kind of thing, or seeing the good in a situation?
I think once you start to think something that's not godly, you have to remind yourself, oh my gosh, you know, what am I doing? And turn your focus on something positive or something good that God is providing for you.
And where does that come from? This the good that God is provided, or the idea of being able to turn my thoughts towards something that God has said, or towards something that God has done for me. What do I need?
Knowledge.
Yeah. Or that's. Sorry. Why knowledge?
Yeah.
Why knowledge?
Well, you answered yes. Oh, that's right.
Does knowledge involve what I think about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
When it says thinks no evil, by default, what am I thinking?
Good.
Good. Where does that come from? I gotta know what to think about if I'm gonna think about it, right? Thinks no evil, that means the knowledge of the world, the knowledge that comes from the world and comes from the enemy, I am able to filter that out. I'm able to say the stuff that I think about, the stuff that I meditate on, it's God's word. It's all the stuff that He has done. And if I'm gonna think about something, I've gotta know it. I've gotta know what I think about. So I think what you think about is most closely related to knowledge, in my opinion. But if you want to, you know, keep no record of wrongs, basically erase that from your knowledge, things like that. But again, it comes from God, and it does take elements of self-control. So it's not like there is no element of any of the other things in here. It's just I think it's most directly related to knowledge.
Self-control.
Yeah, definitely.
Because if something bad happens to me, I could allow myself to think evil.
Mm-hmm.
Or you did something bad to me, I could think evil, or I choose not to think evil.
Yeah.
I control my mind.
That's true. It is
self-control too.
Oh, it is. The idea doesn't enter my head that something evil is going on here, but rather I choose to think of God. I choose to focus on God instead and what He has done. Does not rejoice in iniquity. What do we got there?
We thought that one might be virtue, because rejoicing is an action.
Uh huh.
And if somebody sees sin, you can choose to be happy about it and rejoice or do the sin with them, or
it's not necessarily just what you see, it's just in general iniquity, whether it's in me or anywhere else, right? Okay, and yeah, it's good. Anybody get anything else other than virtue? That's what I thought. I feel like it's speaking specifically, iniquity is, it's sin, it's actions that are sinful. And obviously there is more to iniquity than just actions, but rejoicing in iniquity, I feel, is more about when you see something wrong, instead of aligning yourself with it, not rejoicing in it, being able to cast it down or cast it out or do something else, I believe that is a part of virtue. Rejoices in the truth.
Same idea. But we also put knowledge.
Why knowledge?
Because the truth.
Yeah.
If you're happy about knowing the truth, you gain some knowledge.
Yeah. If you're going to rejoice in the truth, you need to first
know
the truth, right? You can't say I'm rejoicing in the truth, but you don't know what the truth is. The truth comes from God, from knowing Him, from knowing His word, and from gaining this truth through knowledge, through understanding. Bears all things.
Perseveres.
You know, bears, anything that comes my way, I'm able to bear it. I'm able to support it. Right? Any struggles that I or my friends have or whatever circumstances come my way, through God's strength, I'm able to support it and maintain the shape that He's given me because of the equipment that He's given me. Believes all things.
No, faith.
Right? Very much faith. Believes that all things are possible, no matter what the situation. I believe God can do anything. Nothing is hopeless. And on that note, hopes all things. Also faith, right? Believe that nothing is hopeless. God is able to bring good out of something, out of any situation. He's able to lead me through. He's able to teach me. He's able to strengthen me in all things. Endures all things.
Perseverance again?
Yeah, perseverance. Right? There's a difference between bearing and enduring, right? Bearing means you're able to support. That's what bearing is. You're able to lift up and you're able to help. Enduring, it's not just going through something. It's not just getting to the other side. Enduring means you get to the other side intact. You get to the other side and you still have your sharpness. You still have everything that God is trying to teach you. We come out stronger. So endures all things. All right, well done. From by my count, everything that was in 2 Peter 1 had at least one counterpart in this section, right? So here we have Paul and Peter, who different authors wrote it their own letters distinctly from each other, and we see that their lists of growth up to love, they match up, right? They sync perfectly. These things, they go together. So this is what love is. It is the culmination of all of these things. It is the perfection of all of these things. We can't have love in the truest sense, God's sense, the kind that God has, the kind that God is, without every one of these elements. And on top of that, if we don't have love, Paul adds this in the rest of 1 Corinthians about this, if we don't have love, all these other things are useless. He talks about actions that you can do, but if you don't have love, it's worthless. If I stop at virtue, but I don't get to love, it doesn't mean anything. If I'm not continually adding to these things in order to strive for love and partake in a little bit more love every day, then what I'm doing has no purpose. We know that it can only come from God. It's who He is, right? This love only comes from God. So if that's the case, what's the value of the diligence that Peter says? Giving all diligence. What's the value of that if love comes from God? All of these previous steps, faith, virtue, knowledge, and all of them, their purpose is to foster a heart and a life in which God's love can come in and overflow. Because God doesn't dwell with iniquity. Light doesn't dwell with darkness. So all of these other steps that I'm continually adding to and growing in, it's for God's love to have an environment where it can overflow. Jesus talked about the different types of soil that the seed can land on, right? That's my part. That's the preparation of the heart belongs to man, right? That's my part. All of these steps, it's not so that I can grow love within me. It's so that I can grow the love that God has put in me. It's not so I can spontaneously produce love. It's so I can foster and have an environment in my heart that fosters the love that God wants to pour out in me and through me. The first sentence of verse 8 is kind of 1 Corinthians 13, verse 8. It's unique to the passage. It says, love never fails. Love never fails. Everything above that, it's about... they're all attributes of love, right? They're all things about love that we have a role in maturing. This statement right here, love never fails, it's not a value, it's not an attribute of love, it's simply a statement. It's a truth about love that we don't have any part in. It's a statement that love never fails. That means with all of these attributes together that we grow and mature in, the result, love never fails. God is love. And if love never fails, God never fails. And so while everything above that passage is something that we want to grow and mature in, that we want to, you probably heard, if you want to gauge your spiritual walk, try putting your name into each of these positions, right? Everywhere that love is, put your name there and see how you're doing in that. Well, it's true, right? These are the things that love looks like. But verse 8 is something that love does. It's a truth about love, that it never fails. So God never fails. I can always trust Him, though everything else will fail. This is a promise that we can claim and cling to, that God never fails, love never fails. And when He says, love your neighbor as yourself, He says that because it never fails. Does that mean the outcome is always what I expected it to be? No. But the outcome is never a failure on my part. If the outcome is a bad outcome, it's only because a person has decided to reject that love. It's not a failure on my part. It's simply a rejection on their part. Love never fails. It is the way to win souls. It is the way to bring people to God because that's who He is. I want to read a passage from Luke chapter 10. Many of us know it as the story of the Good Samaritan. But there are a few highlights that I kind of want to focus on right here. in Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 25, it says, "And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?'" Now, this is an expert in the law. So Jesus responds basically in his own arena. He says, "What is written in the law? What is your reading of it?" So he's an expert in the law. He better get this right. He says, "So he answered and said, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.'" Is that the right answer? Yeah, that's it. That's all of the law summed up. And he said to him, and Jesus said to him, "You have answered rightly. Do this, and you will live." But he, the lawyer, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" So is this lawyer interested in love, or is he interested in fulfilling the law? Just he wants to justify himself. He wants Jesus to say, "You're doing it right. You're doing what the law says." That's what it means when he says he's trying to justify himself. And when he asks, "Who is my neighbor?" what it's basically saying is there are people in his life that he knows that he's not being loving to. He knows it. But in his mind, he's justified in that. It's okay. I don't have to love this person because this person is my enemy. This person has a background that's against Israel. This person, this person is sick. This person is struck by God, whatever the case may be. He's got people in his life that he doesn't love, and he wants to find a reason to say, it's okay. He wants Jesus to say, it's okay, you don't have to love them. That's not what it means by your neighbor. So Jesus goes through, you know the story, he tells about a man who falls into peril from some robbers who beat him and leave him by the side of the road. A priest and a Levite, they each walk by on separate occasions. They leave him alone, they walk by. And then he talks about a Samaritan who comes, sees him, dresses his wounds, puts him on his animal, takes him to the inn, and all that good stuff. And at the end, in verse 36, Jesus asks the man, "So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" Now there's something subtle here. He says, "Which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" What does the law say? Love your neighbor as yourself, right? But he asks, "Which of these three was neighbor to the man who fell among robbers?" Do you see the distinction? Maybe, I mean, it is kind of subtle. It's flipped a little bit. You think, well, the Samaritan loved the man because the man was the Samaritan's neighbor. But Jesus asks the other way. He says, "Which of these three was neighbor to that man?" Why is that? If God is telling a story to an Israelite scholar, to a lawyer, and there are two main figures, and one's a Samaritan, who do you think the lawyer is going to identify with? The Israelite. Israel and Samaria were enemies, by the way. They didn't like each other. So there's the background, if you don't know. So there, we got a story with two principal figures. One's a Samaritan. Who's the lawyer going to identify with? More likely, he's going to identify with the other guy, even though he was the one beaten. So Jesus asks it this way to show him, "I'm telling you the man who showed mercy on him." Right? The man who showed mercy on that man was his neighbor. So he's telling him, "I want you to show mercy because you've been shown mercy." Right? And look at the man's answer. When Jesus says, "Which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" Does the lawyer say the Samaritan?
Sure.
Did he?
No.
What did he say? He said, "He who showed mercy." Doesn't even identify him as a Samaritan. Jesus specified he's a Samaritan. But then he asks this lawyer which one was his neighbor, and he said, "The one who showed mercy." Now, I don't know if this lawyer was just too proud, he just didn't want to acknowledge that a Samaritan could show mercy, but his answer indicated no distinction in this man based on who he was, where he came from, or any of that. It was simply what he did. He who showed mercy on him. And then Jesus responded. Did he say, "Go and be like him"? What did he say? "Go and do likewise." See, love doesn't distinguish this way. Love is completely independent of our background, our race, our color, our creed, our nationality, and anything like that. Love is an action. It's simply about what are the actions that you live by, the rules that you live by. What is going on inside of you? What is the truth? It's not where did you come from. It's not something physical about you. It's simply what are you doing and what's the truth inside of you. This is love. And so when the man identifies him as he who showed mercy, not the Samaritan, Jesus is saying, go and do likewise. Go and when he says go and do likewise, is he just saying go and do what you just said, go and show mercy? He's saying go and do all the things that I just said. He did. What did he say he did? Let's just quickly go through. I know we're a little bit over time, but I just want to quickly go through what did the Samaritan do. Verse 33. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, so there's an element of actually going about, right? Going out for this stuff. Came where he was, going to the position where the need is. And when he saw him, so there's an element of being aware, right? Of having a heart that's tuned to see these things, when they happen, to see somebody in need. He had compassion. Obviously, there's an element of compassion in love, of wanting to help somebody when we do see a need, when we are aware of it. How do we feel? We have compassion. So he went to him. Again, we see, and there's a lot of action in here. Go through it sometime and just look at all the verbs that the Samaritan did. It's a lot more than the other two did. That's for sure. So he went to him. Again, it's an element of being active and going to where the need is. And bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. So there's an element of resources, having them and being willing to use them for that need. Being able to use our own resources, the things that we have, the knowledge that we have, and the stuff that God has given us, using them for those needs. And he set him on his own animal. So now the Samaritan is walking, and this guy he just met is now above him. Right? When you've got a procession in the streets, who's walking and who's on the animal? Yeah, the important person's on the animal. The ruler, the prince, whatever, is on the animal, and his attendants are walking. Now you've got the Samaritan who's in perfect health. He's walking, and the man he just met who's been beaten, he's now elevated to this animal. So there is an element, again, of lifting people up, even above ourselves, of esteeming them above where we are. Brought him to an inn and took care of him. So we talked about using the resources we have. Now, when we don't have the ability, when we don't have the resources to help somebody, taking them somewhere that they are able to. If I can tell my brother, I don't know what to do for you now, but I'm willing to go with you to a place that does know. I'm willing to go with you to a place that can help. I'm willing to go with you wherever it is you need to go to deal with this and talk to whoever you need to talk to. I'm willing to go with you. On the next day, it's an element of staying there. Right? He stayed at the inn with him. He didn't just leave and went. On the next day, this idea of being there for somebody and continuing to be there for somebody. When he departed, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. So there is an element of financial giving, a financial sacrifice that's going to be part of this. If we want to meet needs, many of those needs are financial, and many of them require finances. So that is going to be an element if we choose to show love. Gave them to the innkeeper and said to him, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you. So now he's not only going above and beyond, but he's saying, even on into the future, I'm going to be here for this man, and I will repay you. So there's an element of faithfulness as well. When I say, what guarantee does the innkeeper have that this man's going to come back and pay him? Just his word. So there's the element that, I mean, it is zero, but his word. Like, there's no physical object that he has as collateral. It's just, this man says he's going to come back and pay. When he says he's going to do it, he's going to do it. He's faithful in what he says. When I say I'm going to be there for you, I'm going to be there for you. When I say I'm going to help you, I am going to help you. When I say I'm going to listen, I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen to everything you have to say. All of these things, when Jesus said, go and do likewise, he was talking about that. It's not just go and show mercy. It's everything that this Samaritan did. They're all in here for a reason, right? He didn't just say it. A Samaritan came by and he actually helped the man. So which one was... No, he specified a long list of actions that this Samaritan took to help this man. And every one of them is relevant. Every one of them shows us what love is in action. And so you've got You've got this Samaritan who, by the end of the story, even the Israelite, even his enemy, is not identifying him with his race. He's identifying him with his action, saying, "He who showed mercy." That's what we want to be. When we're asked and when we're given an identity, or when people assume an identity about us, we don't want it to stop at the surface and say, "This is, you know, an Egyptian Iraqi man who was born in America and he's 6'2" and whatever it is. I want my identity to be by what I do in love for God and in love for others. This is what I want to be identified by. So the attention that each of these things requires never ends. Right? He says, add to, keep adding. Until love is perfected in us, which is not until we dwell with Christ in heaven, in every area of our lives, we are at one of these steps, one of these levels. Right? This is a process that goes on in every one of our lives and in every area of our lives. So keep it up. Growth comes through constant diligence and discipline, giving all diligence. Keep doing good and avoiding evil. Keep meditating on God's word. Keep tempering the inner self. Keep moving and working and obeying God even through difficult times, even through circumstances, even through trials. Keep going. Keep that shape. Keep acknowledging God and revering Him in everything that happens and everything we do. Keep serving your brothers and serving with them. And building up the church, building up the body of Christ, and keep extending God's love throughout the world. That's the purpose of what Peter is saying. Follow Jesus along this path, because every single one of these attributes is completely full in Jesus, right? Follow Him on this path, and we can be sure of the outcome. Love never fails. Do you remember what Peter said at the end of this passage? It says, "For if you do these things, you will never," remember, "stumble." If you do these things, you will never stumble. So again, you've got that connection, right? That cohesiveness throughout the Word of God of what love is and the fact that it never fails. It is always the best option. So with that, I want to encourage you guys and myself as well to be introspective, to look deep and say, this is an area of my life where I know I'm stuck here, and I've been stuck here for a while, and I need to keep adding something to it. I don't know what it is. Now I think I can figure out what it is. Now God is showing me this is something I need to add to build up this area of my life, whatever it may be. Because we want this to be practical. We want this to take root in our hearts, so that God's love can come in and overflow, and the whole body and the whole church is elevated from it. So the outcome of all of this, again, you will never stumble, you won't fail, because love never fails.